Romance across international borders always promises an interesting story. We've got three of them right now on Travel with Rick Steves. We're joined by three American-born women who each developed a fondness for the style and culture of Italy, fell in love with Italian men, and settled into a new life there. Karen Kibbe grew up in Corvallis, Oregon, and just like in a movie, her Roman holiday fantasy came true. She now lives with her husband in Tuscany. Anne Long is originally from Chicago, but found the beauty of Sorrento impossible to leave. She's made it her home now for more than 30 years. And Lisa Anderson grew up in the Seattle area and is now raising her family in a village near Lake Como in the north of Italy. Karen, Anne, Lisa, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
Lisa, how did your adventure start in Italy?
I went to Italy to teach English, thinking I was going to have a short-term educational experience learning to speak the language, and instead I met my husband. He was one of my students. He was an adult student. I need to add that because I did not teach children private school. He
very
wanted
good clarification,
to.
Thank you.
The first time we went out, we had a dictionary between us on the table, which was very funny. Actually, before he even asked me out, he asked me if it would be correct for him to ask me out. It was funny. He came to class one day. He'd been coming every other week for about 6 or 7 months. I'd never looked twice at the man. I mean, wasn't my type. I wasn't looking for anything. And he said, well, would it be okay or appropriate if I were to invite you to dinner? And then he didn't invite me to dinner. He had to wait. I had to wait 2 weeks for the invitation. I'm like, okay, did I miss something here? Are you getting ready to invite somebody else out? Anyway, 2 weeks later, he actually invited me to dinner.
And how many years ago was that?
That was in 1997.
Long time ago. And how's his English now?
It's pretty darn good.
I bet it's good.
Yeah.
All right. Anne Long, tell us about your story.
Well, I went over to Italy as a tourist several times, and then I decided I wanted to go for 6 months to learn the language and ended up staying. I've been 34 years there, and I was married for 28 years. I'm a widow now, but I found an Italian who was taller than me in southern Italy, and I couldn't let the opportunity pass.
And where was that, and what was his name?
Sorrento.
Sorrento.
Always stayed in Sorrento, and my husband was Luigi.
Luigi,
of course.
Perfect. Luigi, taller than you, Sorrento. What's not to like about that? And Karen Kibbe.
I actually came to Italy in 1999, and I fell in love with the country first and was already tour guiding when I met my husband in Rome. He's from Tuscany. His name is Fabrizio. And we met at a mutual friend's birthday party. And I concocted a story, because he works in a bank, about how I was interested in buying property in Italy. And so after 2 weeks of messages back and forth about how to get property in Italy, I finally asked him out for a beer. And he picked me up on a scooter because his car had been stolen. And he thought this was very inappropriate to pick a woman up on a scooter. That's something you do when you're a teenager. But for me, it was very Roman holiday to go whipping around Rome and out to a pizzeria on a back of a motor scooter. And that was it for me. And we moved to Tuscany to be closer to his family.
Fabrizio. You know, if I was happened to be a woman in Italy looking for men, I'll tell you the names are just, to me, sexy. Alessandro, Fabrizio, even Luigi.
That's right. Yeah.
Lisa, what is your husband's name?
Mauro,
there's another good one. Now, Lisa, you live in...
Piemonte,
up in the north.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen, you live...
In Tuscany, on the coast.
Livorno, is
Livorno.
That right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah. You all eventually got married. Were there any surprises after you were committed to each other and settled down? Was there anything that, okay, now the honeymoon's over, this is the way it's going to be?
With me, it had to do with cooking, because I never professed to be a good cook.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it was expected that a three-course meal was going to be on the table every day.
Traditional roles
mm-hmm. that you had to do it. And if not, somebody would shrivel up and die. So we had to do the cooking.
And that's the woman's place.
That's right.
All right.
I didn't have to do a three-course meal every day, but I was expected to do lunch and dinner, a proper meal, hot meal,
mm-hmm.
a wholesome meal. I could not pull something out of the freezer or pop it out of a can.
No TV dinners, no microwaving.
In fact,
you had probably a built-in mother-in-law to teach you if you needed.
I did.
Actually, we ended
up with a really nice exchange going after a while, because when I first moved in with my husband, we were thinking we were going to get our own apartment, but we couldn't actually find a place to live immediately. And they had an apartment next door to theirs where they wanted us to live. And I was thinking, we'll live here while we look for something else. No. And we didn't have anything in the apartment, because when you move into a place in Italy, unless you're renting a furnished apartment, it's empty. I mean, literally walls, you don't have closets, you have nothing. So we didn't have a kitchen. And so we had to eat with my mother-in-law every day. I gained 10 pounds before I learned to say no.
Wow.
She was a great cook.
Now, this is an interesting issue. When you do marry an Italian guy, you're also kind of...
You're marrying their family.
There's no word for privacy in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And so mother-in-laws do feel that you don't necessarily have your private space, and that can be very interesting.
They can walk in at
any time.
Is that right? So they just, you're part of the family, and, you know, we're all together here, and there is that intimacy that's more intimate than you might want.
Well, my mother-in-law, on a few occasions, has actually come to my house when I'm on tour, and wanting to be very nice, it comes from a very good place in her heart. She will clean the house from top to bottom, and she will take all of my clothes out of my drawers and my closets and wash them, dry them, iron them, dry clean them, whatever they need, and then put them all back in a very nice fashion.
Whoa.
Which is
kind of invasive.
Kind of invasive. Yeah.
And it took me a while to realize she was doing it from a good place in her heart, not as a critique of me and how I keep my closets.
Have any of you had experience raising kids with an Italian mother-in-law kind of helping out? Lisa,
yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, it's just expected that they are the babysitters if you need childcare. And, you know, in hindsight, I don't have my in-laws anymore, but my mother-in-law was an amazing help in terms of childcare. But at the same time, you know, when I needed childcare and she wasn't available, I decided that my child should get used to going to a daycare. So it wasn't a complete shock to his system. And my mother-in-law was extremely offended by that. And the daycare in our particular town, they're called baby parking, which I think is a brilliant
name. So why would you go
to
a daycare when you got the mother-in-law right there? Is there something wrong with me?
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
And then so she would, if she walked into town, because our town is small, and she'd walk past the daycare, and she says, "Why didn't you tell me Filippo was at baby parking today? I walked by the window, and he started crying."
Oh. Baby parking?
Baby parking. Isn't that a great name?
Is that what it's called?
Baby parking.
The daycare center?
Yeah.
Just park your baby here.
Park your baby.
Ann Long, Lisa Anderson, and Karen Kibbe are joining us right now on Travel with Rick Steves for an inside look at the surprises and rewards of marrying into Italy.
Is there any sort of general comment you can make comparing American men and how they treat their women and Italian men and how they treat their women? Ann?
Well, American men... Many of them have grown up with working mothers, so they're used to the fact that the wife is outside of the house and that you share jobs. You know, one night, if you cook, I wash the dishes. The next night, it's the opposite. The Italians don't do
that. There's none of that back and forth. You're not going to negotiate this one away.
No.
And Karen Kibbe, it sounds like you sort of initiated things. You asked your man out first.
I did.
Was that kosher? Does that happen a lot in Italy?
He didn't mind. I don't know that it happens very often.
So that would be the exception.
I think it would be the exception for the most part.
Is that a cultural difference at all?
I don't know. But my husband dresses better than any American man I know. Right.
They spend more time in the bathroom.
He spends more time in the bathroom than I do.
So it's probably fair to say that in America, the guys will be hanging out wondering what's taking so long. Why is the woman in the bathroom getting all fixed up?
Right.
And in
opposite.
Italy, it's almost flip-flop.
That's right. And they have as many products in the medicine cabinet for their beauty care as we do.
Lisa Anderson, any thoughts on that?
My husband's pretty non-traditional from that point of view.
Same with mine.
You know, he helps with housework. Mm-hmm. But I have had friends who have said, "Wow, your husband's amazing. There is no way my husband would ever let me do what you do."
Same.
And I say, "Let me do." My husband would not be my husband if he didn't let me do my job.
So this must be a little bit of an oddity for your husbands to take you out in their Italian circles.
Well, I was very lucky, though, with my husband, because being from the South, some of his friends would say, "How do you let your wife travel as a tour manager?"
Just
out,
that notion. Yeah, how would you
outside,
let your wife?
Right. Two weeks away.
Away
who
from
knows
you.
What she's doing those 2 weeks?
And but, let her.
Right.
Like,
let,
give permission.
Give permission. And she's, like Anne was saying, you don't know what she's doing every night.
That's right.
It's probably indicating that you should not be comfortable letting them out for 2 weeks.
Well, the trust factor is a very important thing in any marriage. It doesn't matter what nationality you are.
But how does it work in Italy? I mean, in France, it's kind of understood. A lot of men will have a mistress. Is that acceptable in Italy? Or have you guys said, "I'm an American and that's just not going to go"? Or is that also the same standard in Italy? Lisa, Karen, any ideas on that?
Whether it's acceptable
it's
to have
well.
A...
It's not going
go
with me.
It would not go well with me either.
But in Italian culture in general, is this commonplace?
You know, literally, Italian divorce is hard to get if you need a divorce. So people will have an affair before they get divorced. And it's actually better than it once was. It used to be a 7-year separation before you could be legally divorced. Mm-hmm. Now it's a 3-year separation before you can legally divorce.
So a lot of affairs are actually, these are dead marriages.
They're
and
dead marriages.
People who can't have a divorce. And of course she's having an affair because this love is dead.
And he is and she is.
Or so, maybe it's also a little more spoken. I mean, I don't know that the rates are any higher than in the United States. But here it's a very much, you don't talk about it. And people are looked very down upon if they've had an affair. Instead, over there, I think people realize that it happens. People are not considered horrible people because they've had an affair.
In part because it's so hard to get a divorce in this Catholic country of Italy.
Right.
In part, yeah.
Yeah. And
they don't have the financial means either, sometimes the women, in order to get a divorce. So everybody does their own thing but lives under a communal roof.
And I think we should, I don't want to have a downer here, but it's easy to fall in love with Alessandro and Fabrizio.
It's harder
remember,
to stay in love with them.
10 years later, he's not quite the same shape and not quite the same sort of attraction. And you've got kids, and you've got heavy traditions.
It's much more complicated. But I want to dispel some myths, too. I think that Italian, you know, not all Italian men are Don Giovannis that
are
out there hitting on women left and right. You know, lots of people assume that Italian men are very
loose with their morals.
Yeah, loose with their morals, and
players,
that they're not dedicated to their families or the women in their lives.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about marrying into Italy and any surprises you may encounter. I would just like to finish with each of you, just finish with one of the joys of your married life in Italy, you as an American who married into Italian culture. Anlong?
I really got the appreciation for family. I had my in-laws above my head. They lived above my head for the whole time. And it was just the closeness of having a support system there, that they were very caring with each other. And although it seemed interfering, they were together.
Lisa Anderson.
I would agree with that. You know, that now that I don't have that support system, I realize what I had. And there were times where I just wanted to strangle my mother-in-law because it felt so suffocating and invasive. But, you know, she had our best interests at heart.
And all in all, now that they're gone, you miss them.
I miss them. And I also appreciate, if I can add one more thing, the way they raised my husband and how dedicated he is to us, to his wife and his kids.
Beautiful. Karen Kibbe.
I'm going to slip food in here. I am incredibly appreciative of my mother-in-law's cooking. I am incredibly appreciative of my husband that sits and lingers even if we're just eating a frozen pizza, and we sit in the kitchen and we talk every single night. And when we go to dinner together, even by ourselves, it is very likely to be a 3-hour long dinner. And I really have a great appreciation for the love of food that the Italians have and how integrated it is into our lives, our daily lives, and how much it means for our families all to be together and eat.
Right.
That's a beautiful thing. The hearth is a very important, it's a sacred place in the Italian family.
It is. And we do also sit down every day.
Anne Long, Karen Kibbe, Lisa Anderson, thank you so much and best wishes.
Thanks a lot, Rick. You remind me of my Italian nephew who's studying to sing opera, and he always has to have his neck covered because
he's
protecting his voice, and I'm sure you're protecting yours.
Isn't that
right
interesting? I've just sort of innovated this, but this really helps me.
It's very Italian of you.
Is that right?
It is.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have a scarf in my purse. You've got one on, I'm sure.
Oh, good. Well, you all are clearly attracted to Italian men, so I try my best. A few years ago, adventure cyclist Willie Weir shared a tale with us of a very romantic surprise that he and his then-fiancée enjoyed while on a down-and-dirty cycling trip around Hungary. I thought you'd enjoy another chance to hear what happened.
Well, actually, it doesn't start out too well, Rick. I had just asked my wife to marry me. I proposed to her in Hungary, in Budapest. She had joined me, and this was her first bicycle trip. So she had never traveled on a bicycle before, and she'd been regaled by all the stories that I had and whatever. And what I had forgotten is that there's a lot of times on the road where things are just boring and flat, but you don't tell those stories later. So we head off from Hungary, and we travel the first night, and she's been regaled by people inviting us in. And we get to the end of the day, and all there is this swampy, mosquito-infested area off the side of the road where no place to stay. We set up our tents, and, you know, we give a half pint of blood to the mosquitoes, and we get up the next day, and I look at Kat, and she gets on the bicycle seat, and I see her eyes, and they just balloon to the size of oranges. And I said, "Can you describe what you're feeling?" And she said, "If it hurt any worse, I'd throw up." Now, she was telling me what it feels like to be somebody on the first day of a bicycle trip. So I'm thinking, oh, I'm in trouble. I mean, things need to change fast. We get through the next day, another swamp, another horrible tent experience. And I'm thinking, I don't have many days left before the person I've just asked to marry me is going to head home. We head into this little town. It's a little tiny Hungarian town. And I am desperate. I am looking for something to change.
You're going to lose this woman.
Yes, exactly. And I come up into there's this church, and there's this sign posted on the door. And it says there's going to be an event that night. But it's in Hungarian. It's in Magyar, the local language. So I have no idea. Could be a Boy Scout troop or whatever. But there's an event that night. And I say, Kat, let's stay in town, and we're going to go to this event. Oh, and I'm just thinking, oh, please. So we stay, and the local priest says there's a place we can park our bicycles, you know, in the church, and we get there, and we get in the back pew there, and at 7 o'clock, something's going to happen, and the few pews start to fill up, and finally, in walks in all of these men, and they walk up to the front of the church, and it ends up being an award-winning Italian men's chorus. The conductor lifted his hand, and that little church echoed with the most beautiful sounds I've ever heard. I mean, just goosebumps everywhere. Wow, this is fabulous. So we ended up after the concert, we're walking through the town and just looking around, and we went by this little restaurant, and we looked in, there was this long table. And we looked in, it was the entire men's chorus, and they were having dinner. And the conductor looked out, and he waved us in. And he said, you're the cyclist. And he was the one who spoke English. So we sat down to them, and the wine came out, and we had a dinner with this Italian men's chorus. And while I mentioned to this guy, I said, you know, by the way, I just asked, you know, Kat here to marry me, and we're going to get married. And I said, oh, that's very delightful. And one by one, these men got up from the table, and they walked out. And the manager and the conductor was the last to leave with us. And we walked out and looked out, and here was the entire men's chorus, and they'd formed a gigantic, like, half-moon circle around. There's just one lamplight and a little bit of moonlight shining down on this little restaurant. And the manager looks at me and says, it's your fault. He said, we Italians, we are romantics. And you just said that you asked this woman to marry you? We must now sing for you. And the man lifted his hand, and they serenaded us in this little village in Hungary. And there was that moment when I reached down and I grabbed Kat's hand. And with tears in our eyes, we looked at each other. And not only with love in our eyes, but that moment of, can you really, truly believe that we're here? And it's one of those moments that gets you through the swamps. And it gets you through the bug bites and the late trains or whatever you are as a traveler, because those are the gems that will keep you traveling for the rest of your life.
And your magic carpet was a bike?
Uh-huh. It always is.
And your bike partner is still Kat?
Mm-hmm. My wife's name is Kat, and my cat's name is Dieter.
Happy Valentine's Day to you and Kat.
Thank you, Rick.
Willie Weir writes about his cycling adventures in his books Spokesongs and Travels with Willie, and in online columns for Adventure Cyclist magazine.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton, Casimir Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court upload the shows to our website. Our theme music was written and performed by Jerry Frank. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio.